This is 2.1, a Netrunner Reboot Project podcast. Episode 38, Off the Charts. Hey, this is Remy. The title card for this week's episode is Accelerated Diagnostics, an important piece of a combo package that we will talk about a little bit later on that came in Mala Tempora, the third data pack of the second cycle. We're covering the corpse side this week, and we'll talk about that combo and how it fares in Reboot. But the flavor text on Accelerated Diagnostics is, I'm getting a reading that is off the charts. No, it crashed the charts. That counts as off, right? But before we get into that discussion, let us begin by turning back to the top 50 countdown in our first segment. Anonymous tip, the top 50 countdown, positions numbers 40 through 31. This time around, there are several cards that we haven't seen yet. In fact, close to half of these 20 cards, Runner and Corp, have not been, we haven't reached that part in the project, although a few of them are coming in the fairly near future. Last time I started with the Corp side, this time I'll start with the Runners. As usual, not as usual, but as with last time, I will provide the comment that the big boy made with each post for this countdown. Number 40. A big rig, small deck. Chaos Theory. Wunderkind. Number 39. One of the greatest Reboot success stories. Exile. Street Hawk. So that's not only back-to-back Shaper IDs, but Kate, if you might remember from last time, was number 41, so that's three in a row that are all pretty close to the same power level, in the opinion of the big boy. Number 38, one of the slowest cards in the game, Professional Contacts. Number 37, ends the game for 30 credits, Vamp. Both of those, because he posts a Corp card and a Runner card each day, so both of those are playing off of like the reverse of what the Corp was in those positions. I'll come back to that a little bit later. Number 36, a card that's overrated by newer players and underrated by good ones, the Maker's Eye. Number 35, one of the hardest cards to use. It's all about timing. Legwork. This card comes in the second deluxe set, which is focusing on criminals and Jinteki. It's a criminal event. You make a run on HQ, and then you access two additional cards there. So basically, it's the Maker's Eye, but for HQ. Number 34, the game's best medium user. Valencia Estevez, the Angel of Cayambe. This one comes in the third deluxe box that focuses on Anarch and Wayland. It's a 50-12 Anarch ID that forces the Corp to start with one bad publicity. Number 33. If the Corp has a single super nasty ice, this will get you through. Femme Fatale. 32. An econ slash draw card that just does a little bit of everything you need. Street Peddler. This comes out of the fourth cycle, the fourth pack, so pretty deep into the FFG part of the card pool. It's an Anarch resource. You host the top three cards of your stack face down on it when you install it. and then you can trash it. It's an instant speed trash cost to install one of them, lowering the cost by one. And number 31, it doesn't go in most decks, but this can solve all your econ problems with one card. Magnum Opus. Let's go to the corpse side. Back to number 40. Sometimes you need to end the run, and this gets it done. Enigma. Number 39. Muryu's favorite backup win con. Philotic Entanglement. So Muryu is one of the regulars there on the reboot Discord server, and I don't know the inside joke there on that comment. I guess basically she likes to kill people. I mean, in the game, of course. It's from the second deluxe expansion, Philotic Entanglement. So coming up in the near future is a 3-2 unique Jinteki agenda, where when you score it, you do one net damage per stolen agenda in the runner's score area. So I guess you imagine that if you're only running 1 and 2 point agendas, maybe mostly ones, if the runner has, say, 5 or 6 1-point agendas, and then you can score this, well, then you just flatline them right out. Number 38, the fastest ID in the game, Grendel, Power Unleashed. This is coming up very soon in the 5th pack of this cycle, 2 ahead of where we are now. It's a 4510 Wayland ID, where you start with 12 credits and 1 bad publicity. And number 38 on the runner side was Professional Contact. So this was the fastest ID in the game. He said that was one of the slowest cards in the game. Number 37, ends the run for 1 credit. Quandary, coming in the 6th pack of this cycle, a neutral, 0-strength code gate that has 1 subroutine that just ends the run. So when he posted this together with the number 37 runner card, which was Vamp, he said this ends the run for 1 credit, that one ends the game for 30 credits. Number 36, one of the only nerfed ice, Newshound. Coming in the 4th deluxe box, so the last part of the reboot project, an NBN Sentry. It has a subroutine that lets you trace 3 to give a tag, but also will end the run, as it gives a subroutine that ends the run, if there is a current active. That's a new kind of event and operation that comes starting in the 3rd cycle. Number 35, the best long-term protectable corp econ in the game, Sundew, which we'll talk about a little later on in this episode. Number 34, a win con that requires you to build your deck to take advantage of it, but can carry you to 7 points by itself if you do. San City Grid. Number 33, the card that makes HB Glacier possible. Breaker Bay Grid. So, if you feel like, well, I've been playing HB Glacier, which I do kind of feel that way, apparently this makes it a lot better. So it comes in the 4th cycle, the 2nd pack there. It's a neutral region upgrade that causes the res cost of cards in that server to be reduced by 5. So imagine the advantage of being able to res a Sansan for 5 less, an Eve campaign for 5 less, an Ash for 5 less, right? So, very nice. Number 32, the 2nd best corp ID in the game, Blue Sun, Powering the Future. This comes in the middle of the 3rd cycle. It is a 4515 Wayland ID again. When your turn begins, you may add 1 resed card to HQ and gain credits equal to its res cost. I'm not going to get into this too much right now, obviously, but I do remember this card, and it sounds like, well, so you have to res the card, but then you just get it back into your hand, get the money you paid for it back, but how are you moving forward at all if you install a card, pay to turn it over, pull it back to your hand? Well, I guess we'll get into that. I don't need anybody to write in on how you do that. I have some ideas on how it works, but we'll get obviously much deeper into that when we come to that pack. And number 31, a staple of reboot econ in faster decks, green level clearance. Well, there we go, 31 to 40, or 40 to 31. We'll catch the next 10 in the next episode, but in the current, as I am posting this, he's closing in on the top 10. So if you want to look ahead, jump into the reboot server and go into the channel Top 50 Countdown. Satellite uplink, Mala Tempora, the Corp side. Here we have 11 Corp cards that come in this pack. Three of them are HB, and each other faction, including neutrals, get two. Of the 11, only six of them receive changes in reboot. So far in the spin cycle, in the opinion of the reboot project, the Corp, they're doing pretty good with the Corp cards, because a lot of them are just being able to be left alone. Of those six cards, one of them is a nerf. The first nerf we've seen in a while. Let's take a look at that one first. It's for Haas Bioroid. It is our title card, Accelerated Diagnostics, an operation that costs one and is one influence. Lets you look at the top, well, it used to be three, and now it's two cards of R&D, and then pay for and play any operations, trashing what isn't one of those cards, or what isn't an operation. So similar to, in a kind of, in a little bit, kind of like accelerated beta test, right? Where you get to look at the top, used to be three, now it's two cards of R&D. If any were ice, you'd get to install them and res them for free, and then you have to dump the rest. Well, here, if any of them are operations, you get to play them, although you have to pay for them, and you dump the rest. We'll get to why it needed to be nerfed a little later on in the episode. The five buffs are both of the other cards from Haas Bioroid. Isabel McGuire, a unique asset with a res cost of zero. The trash cost has been bumped up from three to five. She's only one influence, and her ability is click, add one installed card to HQ. Art here from Matt Zeilinger. And Hudson 1.0, a Bioroid code gate with a res cost of three and a strength of five, only one influence, has two subroutines, each of which says the runner cannot access more than, it used to be one, and now it is zero, cards during this run. Comment on that a little more later, too. Both NBN cards receive buffs. City Surveillance, an asset whose res cost has been reduced from five to three. The trash cost is three. It's also four influence. When the runner's turn begins, give them one tag. Just flat out, give them a tag. Although they can pay one credit to avoid that. And Snoop, a sentry with a res cost of six and a strength of six, it's two influence. When the runner encounters it, reveal their grip. Then you can, the subroutine there is a trace, used to be trace three, now it's a trace five, that lets you put a power counter on the card. Power counter lets you, at instant speed, spend it to reveal the runner's grip and trash a card there. And then one of the Wayland cards, IRESS, I-R-E-R-E-S-S, IRESS. It's, the flavor text on it says something like, say it really fast. It's supposed to be IRS, like the Internal Revenue Service in the United States. It's a code gate with a res cost of zero, and a strength has been bumped from two to four. It's one influence. For each bad publicity the Corp has, IRS gains this subroutine, the runner loses one credit. The five unchanged cards are both Jinteki cards, unorthodox predictions, a 3-1 agenda. When you score it, you choose an ice subtype, subroutines on those, a subtype with ice with those subtypes cannot be broken until the beginning of your next turn. Sundew, as mentioned in our top 50 countdown, it was back there at number 35, so one of the best cards in the game here. An asset with a res cost of 2 and a trash cost of 2, it's 3 influence. You gain 2 credits the first time the runner spends a click, unless that you spent that click initiating a run on the server with Sundew in it. The other Wayland card is Power Shutdown. You can only play it if the runner made a run during the last turn. You trash X cards from R&D, and then the runner trashes a program or hardware with a cost of X or less. It also costs 1 to play and is 2 influence. And then both neutral cards are unchanged. Paper Wall, a barrier with a res cost of 0 and a strength of 1. He has just one subroutine, end the run, but if, it says, it phrases it this way, if all subroutines are broken, trash this card. Presumably it's phrased that way because there are ways that you can, other cards can add subroutines to cards that are already there. Typically all in this case will just mean one. Art from Ed Matinian. And then Interns, a double operation with a cost of 0. Install a card from Archives or HQ, ignoring the install cost. So that's nice. And I won't talk about the doubles again. I'll just highlight right here that here is another zero-cost double, which seems to be the best cost for a double. The Reddit at-a-glance thread that looks at each pack and recommends cards from it says that Sundew is good for Jinteki, and potentially useful for any corporation is Accelerated Diagnostics, Power Shutdown, and Interns. As far as cards that show up in reboot pre-constructed decks, 3 different decks did in fact want one copy of Interns, 2 of them Jinteki decks, 1 a Wayland. And then 3 other cards make appearances in one deck apiece with their full sets. Sundew in a Jinteki Replicating Perfection Glacier deck, City Surveillance, an NBN deck with dedicated response team that we're still missing 15 different cards for, notably the ID, and Power Shutdown, which goes into YOLO Grendel, the Supermodernism deck. So, I guess I could have done a segment here, Mandatory Upgrades, where I say, definitely put 3 copies of Power Shutdown in your Supermodernism deck. But I didn't, though I did still say it. The Source. Insight from the big boy on why did this card need to be nerfed. So the nerf here is Accelerated Diagnostics. And you've simply gone from looking at 3 cards to looking at 2. And yet that little change makes such a difference. I asked the big boy, well, can you comment on this nerf? And all he said was, yeah, CI shutdown combo is broken. And I'm like, okay. What does that mean? I know CI means cerebral imaging, one of the HB IDs that came in Creation and Control. I know it's because it lets you have a big hand size. It's designed around making a combo out of it. And I knew that this was part of that combo, but I never really fully understood how to do it. So he recommended a StimHack forum post made by Dan DiArgenio, who was a 2-time, the only, I think, 2-time Netrunner world champion, I mean, including even in Null Signal's extension of the game. Back in 2014 and 2015. In fact, he came fairly close to three-peating using a CI combo deck. So I'll provide the link to this, and you might need to see this to understand it. It's very complicated. I'm going to read through it and hopefully make it somewhat clear what's going on, but you're going to have to pay attention because even as I read it, I'm probably going to get confused and lost a little bit. Even if you read it on the page, it's hard to follow. Fortunately, in this thread, he provides several videos of him playing on Octagon, the precursor to Jinteki.net, where he's just doing the combo. And so if you want to see that in action, several opportunities to do that, follow the link. It is the thread 7-Point Shutdown, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, posted in January of 2015. So this deck has been around for quite a bit now, Dan says, and I don't think it's particularly well-suited to the current meta, but I feel like it's worth mentioning. I've been playing it off and on for a while. I played it at the pre-Worlds tournament and ended up in third, and played it to a win with a record of 7-0 at a recent store championship. I've been trying to popularize it, despite its degeneracy, recently, because I think it's a big skill tester on both sides of the board. It makes for some really novel, interesting games. And most of all, it is the most complicated and dynamic combo I've seen in any card game ever. For those of you who don't know, here's the list I've been playing. And then parenthetically he says, note that the fragments are probably a mistake. Playing two priority requisition allows you to, in edge cases, reclamation order both of them back from archives if milled. And the ability on the 5-3 agendas doesn't matter one bit. So I will mention those in passing. I'll just swap that out like he has said. Otherwise, there's really only a couple of other cards that we haven't seen yet. Though, as I said before, Accelerated Diagnostics nerf has essentially made this not work at all. So here is the list, 7-Point Shutdown, 49 cards out of Cerebral Imaging, Infinite Frontiers. The ability, as a reminder, it's a 50-15 HB ID, and your max hand size is equal to the number of credits you have. Of course, even that part is a nerf, not the ability, but the deck size. It was originally 45-15. It comes with 9 agendas, an accelerated beta test, 3 efficiency committee, 3 Project Vitruvius, and 2, originally he used cards we don't have yet, so I'll just say 2 priority requisition. The assets are just 3 Jackson Howard, and it uses 27 operations. They are 3 accelerated diagnostics, 1 archived memories, 1 biotic labor, 3 blue level clearance, 2 green level clearance, 3 hedge fund, 1 interns, 3 power shutdown, 1 reclamation order. I'll just say this comes later in this cycle. It's another double. What it does is let you pull multiples of the same card from archives to HQ. So think of it like archived memories, but you could get as many as 3 cards pulled back at once. Continuing. 3 shipment from Kaguya, 2 shipment from Mirror Morph, 3 shipment from Sansan, and 1 subliminal messaging, which comes in a couple of packs. It's a 0-cost card that lets you gain 1 credit. And also, if it's the first time you play it, you get a click. And then if nobody runs, the runner doesn't make a run the last turn, you pull it from archives back to HQ. So it's basically an infinite free credit with some shenanigans to make that happen. Only 10 ice in the deck. 3 Eli 1.0, 2 Wall of Static, 1 Enigma, 2 Quandary, which I mentioned as being one of the top ice, coming again later in the pack as a res 1 strength 0 code gate with a single end the run subroutine, and 2 Roto Turret. Dan says the basic idea is to combo 7 points in one turn with a series of accelerated diagnostics after a power shutdown. Someone on Reddit did a good explanation of the mainline combo, so I'll just steal it. Here we go. All right, I'll do my best. Click 1. Play Shipment from MirrorMorph. Install, using it to install Jackson Howard, Efficiency Committee, or another Jackson Howard, and a 3 or 5 cost agenda. Click 2. Play Power Shutdown. And here you can put X number of cards in Archives, the whole deck. Dump the whole deck into Archives. Then, of course, the runner has to trash something. At this point, you, at instant speed, use the Jackson Howard you've installed to pull back 3 specific cards: Interns, Reclamation Order, and Biotic Labor. Okay? So now, and here's the key point, those are the only 3 cards in your deck. So when you use click 3 to play Accelerated Diagnostics, you know you're pulling three operations out of the deck. You know exactly which ones they are. They are Interns, Reclamation Order, and Biotic Labor. So now you will install a Jackson Howard that you still have in your hand, or Efficiency Committee that you have already had in your hand, using Interns. Play Reclamation Order to bring back Accelerated Diagnostics. Now note that both of those cards were doubles. Normally you wouldn't be able to play them both, but because Accelerated Diagnostics lets you just pay the play cost, you don't have to worry about the double cost. You get to play 2 doubles in one turn. And then also play Biotic Labor, which gives you an extra click. So now you have 1 Jackson Howard installed, 1 Efficiency Committee installed, and 1 other agenda. You also have 2 clicks remaining and 2 Accelerated Diagnostics in hand. Now you use your Jackson that's installed to pull back Interns again and 2 of your Shipment from Sansan. Once again, you're only pulling back 3 cards. You now have 3 cards in your deck. Click 4, the extra click you got from Biotic Labor. Accelerated Diagnostics again. Once again, you install your final Jackson Howard using Interns. So you play Interns, use Jackson Howard, then place 4 advancements on Efficiency Committee by playing 2, your 2 Shipment from Sansan. Okay, so Interns, you play Jackson, install Jackson, play Shipment from Sansan, play Shipment from Sansan. With all of Accelerated Diagnostics. Now you have 4 advancements on Efficiency Committee, so you score it. Which does what? It gives you more clicks. So for clicks 5, 6, and 7, you're going to use Efficiency Committee. You, now that you have Jackson, 1 Jackson Howard installed, 1 other agenda installed, and 4 clicks remaining since you have Efficiency Committee, you still have an Accelerated Diagnostics in hand. So you use your 3rd and final Jackson Howard to grab Interns again, Shipment from Sansan again, and Reclamation Order again. Once again, you only have 3 cards in your deck, so playing Accelerated Diagnostics for click 8 lets you install the remaining agenda using Interns, advance the 5 cost agenda twice using Shipment from Sansan, and then play Reclamation Order to pull your 3 Shipment from Kaguyas out of the trash and put them back in your hand. And then you use 3 clicks to play Shipment from Kaguya and score both agendas. So hopefully you sort of follow that. Like I said, I lost the trail in there. When I wrote this up, I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. But even as I read it now, I lost track. I feel like I lost track of the math, the number of clicks. It's very, very complicated. But if you want to see it in action, please follow the link to the forum thread. Take a look at one of the several YouTube videos that he posts there. They're all still up, so you can see it that way. But the key point here is that each time you play Accelerated Diagnostics, you need each and every one of those three cards that are left in R&D, and now it only sees two. So combo is broken. And there's an important reason for it, because, well, this is the ultimate example of something that is completely non-interactive, right? What can the runner do? He'll talk, there's more to the forum post. He'll talk a little bit about what the runner can do. But once you've got the pieces, the runner can do nothing. There's no interaction. And in fact, it's relatively easy to assemble the pieces once you know what you're doing. So that's why the big boy says, yeah, CI shutdown combo is broken. And he removed it from the game. So, and again, in this forum post, he has the link to the original Reddit thread, where he says in the comments section, there's a broad discussion about other ways to pull off the combo, how long it takes, blah, blah, blah. Then he provides a few videos of him playing the deck, including a 5-point combo win, instead of 7, just 5, from 0 credits, a win through the source, and a turn 3 win, thanks to a great opening hand and draw. He goes on to say this deck has a lot of relevant weaknesses. Leela, an identity coming up that bounces cards back to your hand, makes it next to impossible to combo in one turn, but you can still combo 5 points in one turn if you biotic out a 3-2 in an earlier turn. Hades and Utopia Shard, these are cards that come up. They're resources that mess with the corp. They come up in the third cycle. Make it hard, but not impossible. If you draw enough cards, you can win through essentially anything. Noise, with a clone chip in play, is a nightmare, but you can power shut down their clone chips and or take a 33% or 66% chance to win through the random mill if you play your cards right. Vamp can be problematic, but I've found most Vamp decks to be a pretty good matchup because they can't afford to build up Vamp and pressure you. And if they don't run, you can shove a naked efficiency committee out and win from 0 credits if they don't run it. Account Siphon is a minor issue. They really need to land 2 of them quickly for it to matter, which most criminal decks can't do most of the time. One more weakness is that if the runner gets to 5 points, they can stop running to turn off power shutdown and build to a turn where they can get an absurd amount of multi-access, only having to make sure that you have enough cards in your deck that you can't burn through them all in one turn, avoiding having to play shutdown altogether. It's also going to get killed totally by Clot, which is an Anarch virus that essentially stops the corp from being able to fast advance, which is part of the reason I'm doing this write-up and sharing the deck so much. It's just something really cool that you can do. And even if it does cause some grief, it's going to have an end put to it within the coming cycle. So, worst case scenario, I'm helping to infect the metagame for only a short period of time. That's the entirety of that forum post. There, of course, is lots of comments following on. They even had a separate thread that was like puzzles involving how can you combo from these various situations, all of them obliterated by the nerf to accelerated diagnostics. So let me conclude this section by providing Fluffy One's comment from his reviewing the Little Boot Icon series of reviews on RitekiDB. For accelerated diagnostics, he says, once the best combo card in the game, now, the best combo card in a pretty much wombo combo-free card game. Changes, cards looked at 3-2. And he provides a link to Board Game Geek that explains what people used to do with the card. If you want to tell, there's another crack you can take at it. Pros, if you draw this, a power shutdown, and Jackson Howard, you can play any 2 operations in R&D or archives for 1. And X plus 1, where X is the play cost of the 2 operations. Only 1 influence. This is one of the key cards in cerebral imaging decks, as Wombo Combo is the only thing they are any good at. Cons, useless outside of a deck specifically built to utilize it. and Power Shutdown takes a run. He rates it 5 out of 10, best card in a Tier 2.5 deck. And Tier 2.5 is exactly where that deck needs to be. Matrix Analyzer. Well, let's take a look at a couple of the court buffs in Mala Tempora. Not really too much to do here. There's only five, and three of them are ice, so I want to talk about them in the ice part. But Isabel McGuire, there's a buff. It's an interesting ability. The way to think of it is, it's a click. You can spend a click now. You have this new ability. Spend a click to pull a card back into your hand. One way to think about it is you just kind of have another ability in the game. So it's just going to sit there and let you do this other thing. But why would you want to do that? Well, it can do some good work in a trap-based deck, right? So if you've played a trap, the trap doesn't work. They figured out it's a trap. You pull it back into your hand. You put something else there. Now, is that a trap or is that an agenda this time? It could also do some good work recycling campaigns. That might be the most useful thing, right? Like your Eve campaign is mostly tapped out. Maybe you pull it back and put it right back down again. Or same thing with your Adonis campaign. Although then you're not making quite as much money on it. You're just letting them keep ticking away. Bumping the trash cost to 5 makes it quite expensive to trash. And therefore, the runner's probably going to think, is that worth it, spending 5 to trash this sort of niche ability that they're going to use? When it was 3, Wizard, of course, could just go in and take it away. So at least even Wizard with a trash cost of 5 has to work a little bit. One of the benefits of the card on NetrunnerDB, when one of the reviews there said, one of the pros was, you can deliberately make your deck slightly weaker to balance a game against a new player. So, not a very good card. Now, at least, if you want to do something with it, you're likely to be able to keep doing it. And I'll talk briefly on one of the pieces of ice, Hudson 1.0, because now, really, it's almost a different piece of ice. Previously, if the subroutines fire on Hudson, you can't access more than one card in a turn. Now, so that means that really its purpose was primarily to stop multi-access, mainly on R&D. And then you could also use it to stymie accesses of servers with lots of upgrades in them. Think of a server where you've got an agenda and an ash and a red herrings or, you know, whatever. Because the runner was prevented from accessing more than one card, they could only get one of them. So that had its uses. But when you change the number from 1 to 0, right, can't access more than 0 cards, now, of course, it shuts down multi-access, but it shuts down all access. So if the runner wants to be able to access cards in the server, which is the basic point of a run, it basically makes it so that they absolutely have to deal with it. They can't just be like, it's nothing if I'm just going in for a single access. So it's interesting. It really changes the utility of the card. I'll talk more about that in a later segment. Restructure. I've renamed this segment to discuss new economy options that are available to the Corp. This time it is Sundew. As already mentioned, one of the best cards in the game. Very powerful card, especially in a deck that plays a lot of assets or its natural fit in Jinteki Replicating Perfection, because it gives you money unless the runner has specifically used their first click to make a run on the server with Sundew in it. And in Replicating Perfection, they will never be able to do that. So if they don't want you to get 2 free credits every turn, they have to go in and trash it. And so that 2 credits every turn, forever. I mean, its payout is amazing. In fact, it is exactly the same card as Server Diagnostics that we got back in Creation and Control. They are both 2 credits to res and gain you 2 credits forever with a catch. The catch for Sundew is It's only true if the runner is not making a run on that server. And the catch for server diagnostics is, as long as you don't install any ICE. So you can see which one is easier to work around. This is why Sundu is way better than server diagnostics. But hey, they are the same payout. 2 credits a turn. That is Eve campaign, which only lasts for 8 turns, but forever. And Eve costs 4 to res, and Sundu only costs 2. Just as a comparison for how much, it's been a while since we've talked about all of these different campaign type cards, right? Eve, Adonis, Pad, Sundu now, along with server diagnostics, and kind of marked accounts. They all do the same kind of thing. They're an asset that give you money at the beginning of your turn. Eve and Adonis eventually run out. Marked accounts also runs out, but then you can reload it. So over the course of, So I've made a little chart for myself. Let's see if I can decipher it as I'm discussing it here. So it takes, first of all, just 2 turns. On your second turn, Sundu is already turning a profit for you because you've spent 2 credits and a click, so 3 units to install it on turn zero, I guess. On turn one, you res it, and then you get 2 back. And then on turn 2, you get 2 more. So now you've got a net of 2 credits, but if you count the click, it's a net of 1 because that click could have been spent clicking for a credit, of course. Over the course of 4 turns, which is how long it takes Adonis to pay out, Adonis is going to net you 7. Sundu is going to net you 5, whereas Eve only nets you 3. And for Pad campaign, it's only by the 4th turn that they're finally netting you any credits at all. That's why the runner really wants to go kill that Pad campaign early, because it takes you so long to make any money back from it. Now, Eve campaign takes up until turn 6 to equal the payout of an Adonis, but Sundu only takes until turn 5, just 1 turn slower than Adonis, to have the same amount of money as an Adonis. Whereas by turn 7, Sundu now has equaled the payout of an Eve campaign, but Eve campaign takes 8 turns to do that. And then from that point on, just Sundu can just keep ticking away. I mean, we're talking 16 turns here. I mean, not 16, 8 turns here. That's a long time. There's a huge portion of the game. But really, its payout is phenomenal if you can appropriately protect it, which is why the runner will probably not let you tick it away for 8 turns. But that's okay, too, because as long it only takes 2 turns to turn any profit. So as long as you can protect it for 1 turn, you're good to go. And of course, the payout it gives you is on the runner's turn, which is interesting because that is money that you can use right away to, for example, res ICE, as opposed to Eve and Adonis and every other econ card that give you money on your turn. So Sundu, pretty good. ICE Analyzer. We have 4 new ICE options in this pack. Let me go back to Hudson 1.0 and talk about that for a bit. So with its new reboot boost, it's really a soft end the run card, right? Because if you run through it and don't click it away, you basically don't get to access any cards. So you might as well have stopped running. But it's only a soft end the run because you do get a successful run out of the deal. And sometimes the access, missing out on the access is okay. I mean, if you're pulling down a credit from Desperado and a counter for Data Sucker, and now you've got a successful run for Grifter's credit per turn. And of course, there are a bunch of other effects that key off of successful runs that aren't particularly concerned with accessing. We'll see them coming more and more. We already have Vamp and Account Siphon. See, Hudson's not going to do anything against those because the runner isn't concerned about not accessing cards. However, if all you're trying to do is fend off an early game access, a one-off access, or defend a remote server, Hudson is pretty solid. So its res cost is 3. It's out of Yogg range. It costs 5 for Gordian Blade to get through. It even costs Torch 3. Or, of course, they can spend 2 clicks. But it doesn't really fit very neatly into our end-the-run taxing system of sorting things. Like, it's not really taxing, right? What's the tax? You don't get an access. It's not really a tax. I guess the click you spent to run. But it's not really end the run because of all those non-access effects. I don't know. I guess I'll just slot it in to end the run, and maybe I'll put an asterisk. Like, you have to realize it doesn't end the run, and so it's not going to protect you from account siphon or something. Snoop from NBN. This is analog taxing. 6 strength, so that's probably a pretty good clue that it's going to do that. If the runner just wants to plow right into it without an icebreaker, well, the corp doesn't boost the trace, it's going to cost them 5 to beat that trace so that you don't get a power counter on it. Or if you're using Garrot or Ninja, that's going to cost 5. Even Fairy is going to cost 4, so it's taxing. The other tax is that on each encounter, the runner is paying the tax of giving the corp information, right? So, like, what's in my hand? Do I have the icebreaker that's going to get through the ice you have in front of your remote server? Well, now you can know if you're the corp. So that's some information. Information is important. And then if they're just running through it and don't worry about the trace, now you're potentially letting them look at any time later in the game, hey, do you have this card now? Let me look. And take away one of your cards, which isn't a big deal, but it's kind of a big deal. Because you wouldn't normally think of one net damage or one meat damage as being a huge deal. Like, I lost a card. But you know all those times when Jinteki does a net damage, like you steal an agenda or they score one out of PE and you lose a card, you're like, that's the one card I wanted. Well, guaranteed, Snoop is always going to take the one card you wanted because the corp gets to pick what it is. If you don't have a lot of redundancy, Snoop is going to really affect you, which is pretty taxing for just having run through. IRS, sort of another advanceable ice for Wayland. This is a theme, right? Like part of Wayland's color pie, I guess you'd say, is the ability to add subroutines to ice. Normally, the way they add subroutines is by advancing it. Here, the adding of the subroutines is done by having more bad publicity, which doesn't seem like a good thing. So if you have no bad publicity, it's blank. So that's useless. But if you have one, maybe because you are this new identity that's coming up that starts with one, or as somebody mentioned, Valencia, that's one of the good runner IDs, also makes you start with one. So if she's very common, you know you're going to have one. Otherwise, you've maybe given it to yourself through some other effect. What effect does it have with one subroutine because you have one bad publicity? It's a one credit tax, right? The subroutine is the runner pays a credit. There's no reason the runner would ever pay to break that. It's ridiculous. Gordian Blade breaks it for 3. Why would you do that? You just let the subroutine fire. I mean, unless it's behind a chum or some niche case like that, where if the subroutine fires, it's going to hurt you. Typically, though, you just pay, let the subroutine fire and pay the credit there. Except, of course, that you've given the runner the credit to pay for it by having bad publicity. So it's not really costing the runner anything. And what if you have 2 bad publicity? Well, now it's a 2 credit tax. But again, you gave the runner the 2 credits to pay that tax. So what is this card doing? Well, the real purpose of it is to soak up any bad publicity you have. Usually, by having bad publicity, that's a bad thing because the runner now has more money to spend running through your servers. However, if you've got IRS on a server, they're just going to spend that money running through that ice, which means all of the rest of your eyes is at normal, non-bad publicity strength. And the fact that IRS costs zero for you is really helpful. So it's only the installation cost that you have to pay. And of course, the cost of including it in your deck. I mean, I guess if you could be guaranteed, I have bad publicity, and my ability is I'm guaranteed to draw IRS into my hand at the start. And so that you can put it on any server you want, three different servers. Maybe then it would be good. But otherwise, even if it does the job that it's designed for, what if you don't draw it? Then what are you accomplishing? So we're going to call this binary taxing ICE. But unlike most binary ICE, it doesn't make the runner go grab an icebreaker. The whole point of binary ICE is there's this significant tax, but once the runner has the icebreaker, you basically switch it off. Well, here, I mean, it's just low taxing ICE, I guess, because the icebreaker doesn't make any difference. You're not going to play it anyway. I've already given more thought to it than you ever are going to. You're going to look at it and be like, eh, back in the binder. And our fourth ICE is paper wall, which is the ultimate binary end the run ICE. For no cost at all, I mean, the cost of installation, but otherwise no cost at all and no influence, you completely shut down access to a server and make the runner go find a fractor. Once they do, though, going forward, after they break it, there isn't even a nominal fee to get through the ICE. Like ICE wall, it's always going to cost the runner at least one to get through, even with corroder. So at least there's a little bit of a cost. But paper wall just goes away. So ICE wall is a far superior alternative here for this purpose, except for two things. The first is that paper wall costs zero and ICE wall costs one. And the second is that paper wall's influence cost is zero and ICE wall's is one. So often if you don't have the influence for ICE wall, kind of a staple card, maybe you're Jinteki. And so instead you use Himitsu Bako. Well, that costs two to res, right? And you can move it, but it costs two to res. Well, now here's another option. In the early game, at least you cost zero. Of course, a better option than ICE wall comes up in a little bit, but also costs influence. So here's something if that's the way you want to go. Many of the cards discussed in this week's episode are linked in the show notes. Music is provided by Alexi Action, and the website, which redirects to the Reboot Project homepage, is netrunner2.1.com. You can also find links at that website, the Reboot Project homepage, or in the show notes. If you're not on iTunes, and I've inadvertently put too much information into the show notes, in the Reboot Discord server. You can play online at reteki.fun, and feel free to contact me, you know, whenever you want to share something. We've had a couple new people jump into the 2.1 channel in the Reboot Discord, and, you know, feel free to jump in there and share your thoughts, ask your questions, have me give your comments. It is a little gratifying to hear that people are, at least a few people, in this very niche part of a niche game are enjoying the podcast. The final segment will be the AstroScript pilot program as we look at part 7 of our series on clones, part 7 of 8. There are two mini articles here. One of them is predetermination and cloning, and the other one is clones and punishment. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Predetermination and cloning. Clones are not mindless automatons. They are carefully trained to behave within a range of known parameters. But clones are capable of thinking and exhibiting judgment in choosing their actions, which can prove problematic from a commercial or liability standpoint. It also makes them a test of a philosophical quandary that has perplexed humanity since the dawn of civilization: whether individuals can make their own decisions, or whether their lives are predetermined by the combination of their genetic background and their childhood training. In the past, predetermination was purely philosophical. It never mattered whether an individual had a choice, so long as he maintained the illusion that he did and could be held accountable for his decisions. Before clones could become a commercial product, the philosophical question needed to have a practical answer to satisfy megacorporate lawyers. Clones had to be trained to act consistently, much like a domesticated breed of dog, horse, or sheep. Otherwise, the liability concerns would be too severe for clones to be profitable. The experiment began with the hypothesis that a cloned human brain could be tightly controlled. Expert psychologists, educational theorists, and biologists all joined the discussion. Complex models were designed, and tests were conducted, first in massive virtual simulations, and then in isolated facilities upon thousands of live clones. The training schedule could not be completed in isolation. Geneticists had to identify personality traits and link them to the proposed training regimen. Well-established educational protocols were used in conjunction with an analysis of genetic tendencies. Different DNA sequences were tested using identical training methods and then thoroughly studied to determine the most efficient and effective combinations. The key became linking genetic and psychological data sets. Scientists recognized from an early stage that it would be necessary to incorporate elements from human maturation into the clones' education and conditioning so that the subjects' psyches would be recognizable. It also soon became evident that animal models, including genetic sequences taken from domesticated species, provided materials that would be key in designing the optimal solution. Ultimately, it became clear that Gentechi could, in fact, strongly condition clones and engineer them to enjoy following these impulses. There remains a slim chance that any clone can override its conditioning, but improvements in training make the chance little more than statistical noise. The three directives utilized with bioroids cannot be enforced in the same way with clones, but the rarity of rogue clones, particularly compared to the abundance of criminals among the human population, demonstrates the effectiveness of the methods used. This has strong implications for humanity beyond clones. Some who decry the use of clones are most bothered about the very idea that human-like beings could be so predetermined or indoctrinated. Others, however, look at this model and see it as a vital tool for revamping the educational system to produce successful members of society. Clones and punishment. Clones provide cheap labor, particularly in jobs that are less desirable for humans. At the same time, they manage to provide a very human element to these tasks, something that is completely absent in bioroids and mechanical robots. Clones' carefully ingrained cheerfulness, loyalty, and willingness to serve make the lives of ordinary citizens better. However, because clones are living entities with a degree of free will, however small, they can pose a danger to their owners and even their manufacturers. Anyone who regularly interacts with a clone must be aware of the rules that govern clone conduct, or else they could find themselves involved in a civil or criminal case. Clone legislation varies substantially between jurisdictions. Typically, Gentechi provides new owners with the most relevant information at the time of purchase. Gentechi copy centers are always happy to provide the latest information about new rules and regulations. Those who choose to travel internationally with their clones, however, should take care to obtain any permits and be aware of any regulations prior to embarking upon their journey. Some nations enforce strict quarantines upon any incoming clones, while others expect each clone to travel under a passport. Care should be taken to ensure a clone is never taken to Brazil, as the government there outlaws android ownership and instead grants clones asylum while they are within its borders. Gentechi continues to work with various governments to reduce or minimize these inconveniences, but the issue ultimately falls under how clones are classified. When considered a domestic animal, then they are often subject to the same regulations as pets. Until all nations unilaterally agree that clones deserve a special legal status, these problems are likely to remain an issue for international travelers and corporations. Liability. With a first-time clone purchase, the assumption of liability for a clone's actions represents a major concern for the new owner. Clones are not legally independent beings. Because of this, they cannot assume legal responsibility for their actions, in much the same way that a domestic animal is not subject to legal repercussions for its actions. Instead, the clone's owner assumes this responsibility. Certainly, clones are subjected to training that is far more thorough than the typical pet, but their relative freedom. Most owners send clones to independently perform tasks outside of their residence, offers a tremendous opportunity for mishaps. Owners need to keep this in mind at the time of purchase, and they are encouraged to obtain the necessary insurance. Gentechi offers this coverage along with extended service plans, although many home insurance plans include special riders for clones. Renegade clones represent an important exception to the concern of liability. If there is evidence that the clone has somehow overcome its conditioning and education, acting completely independently of its owner's direction, or if the owner reports the clone lost or stolen, then the owner is excused from any liability. Instead, the clone is considered a public menace and is disposed of in the most humane way possible. However, if evidence demonstrates that the supposedly renegade clone was acting on its owner's instructions, no such clemency is granted. In order to have the best possible chance of avoiding any culpability or penalty, owners should report missing clones as soon as they become aware of the situation. Similarly, clones that show performance issues, particularly any difficulties in following directions, should be taken in for testing as soon as possible. Such issues are covered under warranty. A copy center can refresh their conditioning within a week or two, thereby restoring their performance and eliminating concerns. Abuse and neglect. Owners who fail to take proper care for their clones can also be subject to liability. This is particularly true in municipalities where clones are treated as domestic animals. Laws intended to prevent animal cruelty can come into play regarding the treatment of clones as well. Owners who fail to provide their clones with adequate care, including medical supplies and necessary clothing, may face charges for their actions or inactions. Gentechi is particularly litigious toward locales that maintain such laws. Until better ways to adjudicate such concerns are identified, however, owners who are likely to place their clones into particularly dangerous situations, including many corporations dependent upon clone labor, must take care that these situations do not qualify as abuse or neglect. Otherwise, they could be subject to stiff fines or other severe penalties.